Development, and it is Wednesday, August the 13th of 2003. August. And with that comment, then I will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 931. And we have folks signed up here. Christine and who's that?
I think Christine.
What's Christine again? Darcy?
Yeah. I think we have Krista McNutt and Christine Darcy. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. As soon as I'm just going to get him head this way.
Sure.
Okay. Christina, we're going to do a little overview of the bill. You want to wait till we get everyone else in here? Let's do that. When you guys are ready, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Christina McNutt, and I'm representing the Cultural Advocacy Coalition. In support of provisions in Senate Bill 931A, the Cultural Advocacy Coalition is a statewide nonprofit political advocacy organization working to increase investments in culture, the arts, heritage, and the humanities across Oregon. Through voluntary membership, the CAC represents the Oregon Cultural Trust and Oregon's statewide cultural partner agencies, including the Oregon Arts Commission, the Oregon Council for Humanities, the Oregon Heritage Commission, the Oregon Historical Society, and the State Historic Preservation Office. Senate Bill 931 is the result of extensive collaborative efforts on the parts of many partners, the ones I just listed, in addition to the offices of the governor, represented here today with Howard Levine, Senator Clarno, Representative Johnson, who just joined me at the dais, and I think I will short my testimony. And the Oregon.
She's going to be long on hers.
Protocol. The Oregon Heritage Commission.
Did you get back to floor? Maybe we could have you. Oh, you're okay. Okay. Sorry about that. I just happened to realize you guys were sitting.
The Oregon Historical Society, the State Historic Preservation Office, and the Oregon Arts Commission represented to my left with Chris Darcy. As you know, the Oregon Cultural Trust has experienced significant funding modifications from its original conception in 2001. The trust is no longer the recipient of funds from the Boardman property sale and receives no general fund support for administrative or other programs. Further, remaining general support for the Oregon Arts Commission through the 0103 biennium was eliminated in the sixth special session. The Cultural Advocacy Board has spent considerable effort contemplating the best ways to approach to meet both Governor Kulongoski's and the co-chair's recommendation that the Arts Commission merge with the Cultural Trust. And basically, that is what Senate Bill 931 before you does today. 931 maintains several goals that the Cultural Advocacy Coalition had set out. One, to maintain a separate and independent board for both the Cultural Trust and the Arts Commission, where they function under separate purposes and authorities as two distinct entities, but under one administrative umbrella. It preserves the distinct missions of both the Trust and the Art Commission, with decision-making responsibility for their respective grant programs, criteria, and grant awardee selection. We were hoping to continue to protect the tax credit for the Oregon Cultural Trust and retain a critical level of general fund support for the Oregon Arts Commission, which was enveloped in House Bill 5013, which passed the House floor yesterday. Passage of Senate Bill 931 will take a great step towards preservation of an arts and culture infrastructure in Oregon in the midst of a very tough economy. The Cultural Advocacy Coalition is fully supportive of these efforts to promote efficiencies through shared operations and administration between both the Trust and the Arts Commission in order for to be positioned for strong viability when this economy returns.
Representative Johnson. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I have not seen the Dash 3 amendment, so I'm at somewhat of a disadvantage. I just was handed the sheet when I walked in the room. So I'm going to reserve comment on those. By way of a little bit of background, the governor's office, Senator Clarno, and I were all eager to leave this session with a cultural landscape and an arts landscape that was not completely denuded by our budget situation. I think we recognize very clearly that the state is facing unprecedented demands on what little money there is, but to completely strip the arts and cultural landscape of any support seemed wrong-headed. And to that end, I work with Senator Clarno's office extensively to help develop a structure by which we could present to the legislature efficiencies, cooperation, and collaboration among art groups heretofore unprecedented in Oregon. And to that end, we have before you this bill with a proposal to figure out a way to have arts groups work together in ways that they haven't before, to preserve the structure of the Cultural Trust, to allow private sector donations to continue to fund arts, and to allow the Arts Commission to work in a collaborative way with the federal government to maximize the grant monies that come into Oregon for arts, cultural, and historic enterprises. And so I commend this bill to you. We testified before the Senate Rules Committee, and it was the first time in all the time that I've been lobbying, both as a citizen activist and then subsequently advocating for bills as a legislator, that the chair was good enough to come down and sit with me and testify together in support of Senate Bill 931, and I commend it for your favorable review.
Thank you, Representative. We're going to get a description of Dash 3s.
Mr. Chair and members, the Dash A3s has further clarification of the A engrossed bill. In the A engrossed version, the language indicated that whatever budget was approved in the Secretary of State for the trust account would simply transfer on the effective date of this bill. The Dash A3s are further clarifying, since the Secretary of State budget isn't specifically budgeted at the division level for the trust account. What we did was we went back to the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation for that division's budget. We assumed that 2 months of expenditures would occur in the Secretary of State's budget, and we established another fund's limitation of $460,569 for Economic and Community Development Department budget, so that it was more specific and people didn't have to guess as to what was in Secretary of State's and what rolled over. So that's what the A3s are doing, is just further clarifying what that limitation is. Just further noting, the Secretary of State's recommended budget did not anticipate a full level of grant funding, because they didn't know what grant funding and funds were going to be available that the trust might allocate through the program. So it's very likely that OECD would be back at the emergency board when grant funds are known for additional expenditure limitation if this is not adequate. But this is to get them started and cover their administration and the transfer of the two employees.
Okay. That
concludes my testimony, Mr. Chair, and with that LFO explanation, this seems completely technical in nature, not substantive, and doesn't seem to present a problem.
Is that number within everyone's kind of expectation of what it would be? Is that in the range?
Yes, okay. Mr. Chair.
For the record, my name is Howard Levine. I'm Governor Kulongoski's policy advisor on matters related to art and culture. Chairman George, members of the committee, I just want to reiterate the governor's strong support for SB 931. As Christina mentioned, he and the Ways and Means co-chairs both last spring called for this merger of the Cultural Trust and the Oregon Arts Commission. SB 931 accomplishes this merger while preserving both the administrative structures that allow art and culture to thrive in Oregon and preserve the trust's ability to independently carry on its core mission of raising and dispersing funds to promote culture throughout the state. The governor strongly believes that art and culture are critical to the well-being of children, to the state's quality of life, and to Oregon's economy. We know that art and culture creates jobs, promotes tourism, and helps attract and retain businesses. But the governor also believes that given current budget realities, we need to find less costly ways of delivering public services, and that would also include art and culture. SB 931 will reduce overhead and rent. It will help eliminate duplication between the Trust and the Arts Commission while maintaining their separate missions, and as others have reiterated, this has really been a bipartisan effort. We've had great cooperation from former Senator Klarna and her office, from Representative Johnson, from the Trust Board, from the Arts Commission, from the Secretary of State's office, And I just want to also note, as Christina did, that this bill is just one of three critical pieces for preserving art and culture in Oregon. The second is assuring an adequate budget for the Arts Commission, and I want to thank this committee, subcommittee, for supporting HB 5013. So we're making good progress on that. And the third piece, of course, is holding on to the Cultural Trust tax credit, which the governor also considers very important. So in conclusion, SB 931 will help save art and culture in Oregon. It will also help save money. And these are two worthy goals that the governor hopes this committee will endorse by supporting 931. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Chris Darcy. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Arts Commission, and I extend my thanks on behalf of the nine members of the Oregon Arts Commission for your support of funding for the Arts Commission in the 03-05 budget. As Howard suggested, that is a critical part of this cultural package that you have before you in Senate Bill 931. The Arts Commission, when it met in June in Salem, endorsed this proposal, endorsed Senate Bill 931, does feel that there are cost savings to be had. We definitely believe that there are efficiencies, and we would ask for your support of the bill.
Very good. Any questions for our guests? We're going to have a quorum, hopefully, in a minute.
Yes.
Very good. Would you like to go ahead and let's walk through the bill and make sure we all understand it? I think we're
okay.
Pretty well doing it.
Handing bills by any chance?
I did not hand in bills.
Okay.
Did you agree?
Yeah.
You should, it's in the packet.
In your packet before you speak.
Yes, I was just trying to fit these things into the bill to figure out what it did.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, I think as in the testimony you've heard before you, this bill does do the transfer and merge of the Trust for Cultural Development account and the two employees currently in the Secretary of State, and transfers them over to Economic and Community Development. Again, the dash A3s are clarifying language. The A engrossed bill indicated the budgets adopted for the Secretary of State would simply roll over to OECD on the effective date. This is actually putting in a specific amount. It's not raising or lowering it, per se. The Secretary of State's budget is not developed at the division level, so it made it a little bit difficult to track bill to bill. So that's why we've opted to put in a specific provision, but this isn't modifying their budget in any way.
Senator Dix, do you want to walk through and see if we need to clarify how the sections get together on the A3s?
I don't know. It's probably all just fine. So the money that now goes to the Secretary of State's office will, in the future, go to the Economic Development Department?
The
and
Trust and
towards?
Cultural Development account is transferred to OECD.
Okay.
Yes.
That does that. Okay. And I guess I'm curious, Mr. Chair, as to, are we going to have two separate entities now under the Arts Commission? And two separate pots of money and two separate goals?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, Chris Darcy again. There will be a single arm within the Economic Development Department that will encompass arts and culture. The trust will be a wholly separate, discrete fund for culture under the arm of the Oregon Arts Commission. The trust will also have a separate board that will be making decisions for the funds that are dispersed from the trust, because the Arts Commission really is focused on the arts. The uniqueness of the trust is its ability to serve historic preservation, heritage issues, the humanities, as well as the arts. So we feel it is appropriate that there be a separate board that will oversee that trust fund, but there will be a single shared operation.
Will we be working toward the day for the goal of merging all of this in the future and saying that arts and culture can mingle in one agency and have one board that is dedicated to the whole operation?
I would think that that would be a possibility in the future.
Senator Dukeson, there will be.
A good thing to for them to work to achieve.
I mean, basically, what this bill will accomplish is there will be one entity That will be the Oregon Arts Commission. They will be responsible for sort of broad policy and management. There will be two boards, and because we want to hold on to the core function of the Cultural Trust Board while trying to come up with these administrative and management efficiencies by no longer having separate rents. And Chris can talk about some of the specifics of where the financial savings will be, but there essentially will be one entity, although separate boards.
And I think I understand all of that. What all I'm saying is we created, and I understand the sensitivity to what we created. We created a good thing when we did the trust. But I think it's not a bad thing to put to work toward really merging them with one board that's making spending decisions, one board that is sensitive to art and cultural things. I mean, I don't see them as mutually exclusive, and I suspect that you could work toward the end of having a board that didn't see them as mutually exclusive. And you could probably in the future get further by being able to commingle funds and move forward. Not that you can't under this arrangement, it would just be a little more difficult having to pass it through two separate boards to get there. So I'm not suggesting that we do it this biennium. I understand all of the sensitivities that must be involved here. I'm glad we've gotten this far, but it seems to me that a goal for the future would be to have one board.
Sure. For the record, Betsy Johnson again. Senator Dukes, I take a proprietary interest in the long-term outcome of this, given that I have emerged as an advocate for Senate Bill 931 and what it confers this session. I think you raise a very good point, and the whole idea behind this amalgam right now is to try to find efficiencies and collaboration. I would look forward to a day when you had arts and culture under one roof, and whether it was a historical society somewhere out in eastern Oregon or an arts group in Portland or a performance group in Eugene, to have them have a forum where they could both raise private sector money and advocate to policymakers with one voice, in my opinion, would be an ideal outcome. I think what you see before you today is a quantum leap forward among some groups who are very proprietary in that issue area that they see themselves as the guardian of. And I would be willing to make my commitment to you as my senator and the rest of this group to continue to advocate towards a time when the arts and culture not only all fit under one umbrella, but also don't come to the legislature begging as individuals for little tiny pots of money, but we can make our voice heard on behalf of history, arts, culture, preservation, in a way that the legislature responds positively and believes that the money is being spent appropriately and funds accordingly.
Before I ask Representative Krieger if he has any questions, since he was unable to be here because of the floor session, I do need to read this. There is a certain irony to a bill relating to culture being heard in a committee chaired by a man that wore a tie with a Hawaiian shirt.
We know who that is.
We just follow our guidance.
Okay, just follow me on that. Now I'm embarrassed. I thought it looked pretty good. I mean,
it should have been the day you wore it, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
I think the House members are under a call.
Oh, are they? Oh.
We're in a session, maybe.
We are going to move to a work session. Right, Representative Krieger, do you have any questions?
You better move the gavel.
Move the gavel. Okay, I'm going to close
dash up. Three amendments, Mr. Chair.
Okay, wait. I'm going to close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 931. To your motion.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the dash A3 amendments to Senate Bill 931.
Senator Duke has moved the dash A3 amendments to Senate Bill 931. Are there any questions or comments? Without objection, seeing and hearing none.
Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 931 as amended to full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Dukes has moved that 931 as amended with a dash A3s be moved to the full ways and means with a due pass and has volunteered to carry. Are there any objections to her carrying? the bill or to the...
Excuse me, I didn't remember that name in the motion.
Oh, yeah, we did.
All right. Well, I should ask legally after the comment.
Actually, you should.
Ignoring the last part about agreeing to carry the...
That's
everyone
right.
Understands the motion. Is that correct? All right. Are you without objection? Seeing hearing none. Now, back to the serious note.
You got to hurry because the guy is standing out here for the House people.
Yes, I know.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith, yes.
Recently,
and he does not wear a
sign. And he wanted to carry the bill?
Yes, he did.
Will you do it too? Will you carry it?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
It's my session.
All right. Now, let's go ahead and we're going to go to Senate Bill 772, the public hearing. Okay, I'm going to, Okay, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 931, and we're going to open a public hearing, continuation of the public hearing on Senate Bill 772A, related to transportation.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate Bill 772 was before you on Monday for public hearing, which was very brief, but this bill would establish the innovative partnership program with the Department of Transportation, would allow the agency to enter into agreements with private entities or other units of government to complete transportation projects. It creates the Transportation Enterprise Fund and allows the agency to consider various types of financing mechanisms to accomplish transportation projects. There are two sets of amendments before you. The Dash 8 lines address some confidentiality issues concerning private proposals, addresses when public contracts and purchasing laws would apply to these contracts, provides that the Oregon Transportation Commission could approve the agreements rather than the commission and the director, and requires ODOT to report to the emergency board at least twice during each interim on projects proposed or agreed to. The Dash 810s, I believe, were at the request of Senator Morse, that removes reference to land security as part of the financing. And those are the two that are before you this morning.
I believe the language from that, Senator, correct me, it was also brought to us, you know, by ODOT sources. So they're agreeable to that?
Department of Justice.
In your packet of information, Legislative Fiscal had distributed a list of questions. The agency's responses to those questions are in your packet, as well as the fiscal statement. And I believe on Monday we had only heard from Jim Witte from ODOT. I don't know if he had any conclusive additional remarks.
All right. Jim, would you like to continue, or if not, we'll...
I think we could hear from some others.
Okay, very good. Well, now, are you miffed that we had to cut you off?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
I understand the process.
All right. Pete and John Carter, Shepard and John Carter.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Pete Shepard. I'm the Deputy Attorney General. Let me start with a little bit of a personal disclosure. My relatives, the Altucker family, are principals in Eugene Sand and Gravel, and I suppose if this bill becomes law, they conceivably could be beneficiaries of the structure created here. I don't think I actually have a conflict, but I didn't want you to be surprised or disturbed if you later learned of that familial connection. The bill contains many policy choices on which DOJ has no position one way or the other. But I did want to take just a chance to reassure each of you that ODOT has reached out to us and engaged us in the process of developing the legislation, and we've been pleased with the interactions we've had with them. And the result that you have, both the printed bill, the A9 amendments, and the A10 amendments, in our judgment, now have no legal defect in them, and indeed many changes have been made to mesh them with existing law. So we're very, very confident in the validity from a legal standpoint of the proposal that you have before you. Let me very briefly address one of the issues that your staff raised in the list of questions that relates to the Department of Justice function. Under current law, legal policy decisions are exclusively for the Attorney General to decide, and substantive policy issues are reserved for the agency in question to decide. Section 5 of the bill really is a specific iteration of that general rule. That section begins on page 4. And basically what those provisions end up boil down to is that DOJ will need to recognize that this bill creates a whole new structure in which ODOT will be required to take a nimble and opportunistic approach to transportation projects. And DOJ's function with respect to that new approach is to match that approach, innovation for innovation, flexibility for flexibility. And in very large part, that's the message DOJ derives from Section 5 of the bill. Included in Section 5 is explicit authorization to do that, which we already have authority to do under Chapter 180, which is to secure specialized legal expertise in the form of special assistant attorneys general to help the agency in the development of a particular project or set of projects. And so we're comfortable with Section 5, and we do not view it as constraining our capacity to give advice to ODOT in which we might, for example, alert them to a potential business risk, even though in the end that's a judgment under the bill for ODOT to make. But we would not see anything in Section 5 that would prohibit us from bringing that to the agency's attention. Finally, with respect to the A10 amendment, that is responsive to the concern that both you and Mr. Chair and Senator Morris raised on Monday. And the gist of the way, as I understood the concern, was that Section 7, subsection 4 of the printed bill, at least on its face, created the possibility that in a foreclosure situation in which someone, a bondholder, for example, was exercising their right to take security, that it conceivably could be, under at least the language of subsection 4, that security would have taken the form of land, and then that in turn raised the question of whether by that mechanism a private party might somehow acquire real estate that really belonged to the public. And I understand there were some discussions with ODOT's technical staff and with Legislative Counsel's office, the gist of which is that in the A10 amendments, that possibility is eliminated by eliminating any reference to land, and therefore the security that's referenced in that is the stream of income from various projects, but not the land itself.
May I ask Mr. Shepard
a question? Sure.
Yeah, I don't know whether it has changed. I have not had a chance to read the total bill. But in the B amendments of 772, in the measure summary, it says ODOT may enter into agreements with private entities and units of government that may include any financing mechanisms, including but not limited to the imposition of franchise fees or user fees, for the development or use of other revenue sources. And so in order that they might not get into the commingling of funds issues, how will that fit into their framework right now, and how will DOJ be on top of that so that is never a confused piece?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, I'm going to alert Mr. Witte, and I'm going to ask him to answer the first part of your question. As to DOJ's function, we've already assigned a top-ranked lawyer in our general counsel division to be the central contact person for ODOT on all Senate Bill 772 projects. And so we would expect that person to develop, as part of the ODOT team that works on this, expertise sufficient to help guide the agency through those kinds of problems. But as to the specifics of your question, as to what ODOT envisions with respect to franchise fees and so forth, I would defer to Mr. Witte or others.
I think that's okay because the main question I really wanted to know is, will that guidance be there from your department so that they will always have a contact person they can ask, and as long as it's specified under, to use your language a few minutes ago, 772 projects, and so that there can never be any confusion about that, because I would worry, since Senator Dukes has been my mentor here and telling me all about all the different iced tea and dips and all that kind of stuff, you know, how would they keep that separated? But knowing if they'll have an advisor, legal advisor along the way, that makes me feel comfortable for them, because I believe that they will run an efficient program. It's not about that. it was with making sure, because sometimes when many of us who feel so compassionate about our work, we can forget that piece, but as long as there's an advisor there, I can feel comfortable with that.
We, Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, this is in some ways an experiment in public policy, and we're going to have to match that. As I say, innovation for innovation at DOJ, and part of our first step to do that is to assign a single person that we envision sort of being the hub in the wagon wheel of legal services that ultimately may need to be accessed by the agency as they try to do what's envisioned in the bill. And that person is the Assistant Division Administrator and General Counsel Division, so he's in a good position to coordinate all the different pieces that will be required.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, this has really helped me because my first read of the bill was, oh my goodness sakes, and was concerned about several issues, and particularly till we perfect the process. Once we get the process perfected and everyone's learned where the sideboards are, I think we're going to be fine. But I'm really glad to hear that we are now, and that there's been that coordination between ODOT and your office. Senator Dukes.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and I apologize because I'm not sure who this question is for. I just want somebody to talk to me about tolling. We have some fairly limited statutes, and in fact, Barry and many of us have worked hard to make sure we had limited tolling statutes, and I think this is a great idea. I can tell you that there are people who would not be happy if suddenly the agency were to say to them, you can have your project only if it's tolled, for me, tolling can be a good, useful thing to do, but there are a lot of things to be done around it, like a study to see where the folks who can't afford the toll are going to be driving next, and community involvement and that kind of stuff. Am I wrong? But I think that we've just opened the door to complete tolling, if that were where somebody wanted to go.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, I can give you the legal answer as to what the bill does, and then again I defer to Mr. Witte for the kind of what they envision about the policy direction. But from a legal standpoint, Section 4 of the bill at the top of page 4, lines 2 to 3, exempt tollway projects that are undertaken under authority of the Senate Bill 772 from the existing toll process that's laid out in those statutes. Those are the statutes at 383.003 and following. And those are the statutes that pertain to currently, in current law, that pertain to the establishment of toll roads. And by the elements of 772 that I've noted, 772 projects would be exempt from those procedures. But as to the policy of how they envision, how often they envision those kinds of projects being entertained, I don't know.
Now, when we talk about 772 projects, are those only projects that are built with that? If you had an existing road and you wanted to do major reconstruction, could you go out and publicly, come up with a public financing method for using that, and tolling being a part of that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, I would go back to the definition in the bill of transportation project, which is on page 2 at lines 8 to 9. It means any proposed or existing undertaking that facilitates any mode of transportation in the state. I think the answer to your question would be yes, that is within the scope of that. Again, different question as to whether the agency would pursue that as a matter of business judgment or policy, but it, as a legal matter, that kind of thing would be within the scope of what's contemplated in the bill.
He can come up if you want. That won't do me any good. I am one of the folks, Mr. Chair, and you are another one who have worked hard on toll laws over the years, and I worked hard to get the toll off of the Astoria Bridge, the only bridge that the state owned that had a toll on it. And this bill allows me to wake up one morning and find out that the next major repainting we're going to do, or revamping we're going to do with that bridge, will be done, and we'll have a toll on it. And that's just not okay with me.
They don't have to come back to the legislature and ask.
Of course not.
Senator Starr, would you mind coming up too, because to talk about this whole issue? My thought, you know, last session the Transportation Committee was looking at the whole idea of tolls and expansion and some of the innovative funding things, and one of the things we came to a conclusion really quickly was this is such an extensive process, not only for ODOT, but also for any private who's going to contemplate doing it. They're going to examine that in depth. You know, when we ran out a little discussion of putting a tracking device to measure miles on cars, it was all over the state in a big hurry. Can you kind of help relieve concern about where this might be?
Let me say, Mr. Chair, I don't out and out oppose tolls. I think that they can be a useful purpose, and I've supported them in the metropolitan area. After we got pieces in that said you got to work with the local community and you have to do studies to see where the traffic's going to go, because there are repercussions to having toll roads. But to just out and out make them illegal across the state without all of that discussion that we've had in prior years and without communities weighing in, well...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jim Whitty with ODOT. This bill was modeled after the toll road statute. We even offered the Legislative Council the opportunity to do this bill in the toll road statute. They chose to write it this way rather than rewrite the toll road statute, partly because we started this bill on December 22nd. So the intention is not to create toll roads everywhere. In fact, ODOT would have no authority to create a toll road itself. The Oregon Transportation Commission has to review any deal that comes that ODOT would put together with the private sector or another unit of government. That is the protection. And that's the case it would be under the toll roads as well. So there's a public process. We have to involve the local governments under this bill and the metropolitan planning organizations and the area commissions on transportation in any arrangement. They have to be consulted. So it becomes a political process. Tolls are always political. A toll that is not wanted in a locality and not supported by the locality will not be implemented by the Oregon Transportation Commission. The deal will be turned down.
I'd love to believe that. I don't believe it. You don't know what it took me to get that toll off once the bonds were paid. I don't believe it. I wish I could. For most of the state, I think it still at this point did not appreciate a toll road. And I have seen communities, yours included, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chair, that have been told you can have your project if you're willing to take a toll. I mean, I faced the only bridge in the state that had to support its own money for repairs and repainting and maintenance. The only one. Every other state got transportation dollars for it. So I believe that you believe it. I don't have that kind of faith.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, I don't know where this statute is different from the toll road statute as far as removing restrictions. In fact, there are restrictions placed in this bill that are not in the toll road statute.
What I see so far, Jim, is that this is statewide. The toll road statute, I believe, is not statewide.
I think this toll road statute became statewide. When was that?
It was expanded.
For the record, Senator Bruce Starr, District 15, Western Washington County. I could be wrong, but I believe we expanded the toll road statute in 99. I think it was then-Representative Leslie Lewis who had it narrowed for a couple, maybe two or three projects. I think in 99 it was expanded. To deal with this toll road issue, I've said in public a lot in the last 24 months that I believe that tolls are coming to Oregon as we look to find ways to fund projects in this state. We don't have the money in the Highway Trust Fund to build the projects that need to be built in this state for a variety of reasons. And I wish we could change some of the rules that in my estimation encumber the department so they can't build as much as I wish they could with the existing resources. And I've told folks in public meetings that, like it or not, tolls, if we want to build
new facilities in this state, you're going to have to fund them somehow, and user fees, user pays via tolls is a way to do it. The technology is much better today than ever has been there in the past. You know, being able to have a smart card and have your toll deducted as you drive through at 65 miles an hour, I think is you know, great technology, and I think it makes tolls more attractive. I've also said in those public meetings that I don't believe politically that there's going to be an existing road that all of a sudden has a gantry, you know, constructed over it, and that you're not going to, that the public's, you know, all of a sudden going to wake up and have to pay tolls on any existing facility. Politically, I don't believe that you're going to have legislators, county commissioners, city councilors that are going to be willing to stomach the public outcry if that were to take place. I understand.
And the commission,
I think, is would be in that. I mean, they respond to the public. They respond, quite frankly, quite well to the governor's advice as well. I've noticed that of my time here. So I understand the reluctance because of the potential broadness of this particular piece of legislation. But I think in reality, in the real terms, in the real world, I don't believe that we're going to be putting tolls on existing facilities, even though this bill in black and white probably allows it. I think in real terms, real world, the political world that we all deal in, and this bill isn't outside that world. I don't care really what project you're going to build. You have a large company come in, knock on the door, and say, we want to build XY freeway, or we want to expand X freeway. This is how we think we're going to fund it. That conversation is not going to take place completely behind closed doors without a whole lot of public involvement. That's just, it's not Oregon. You don't have an Oregon system that allows for those kind of backroom deals. I don't know if the other states you do, but I know in Oregon you don't. These processes that we've set up and have been set up in Oregon are ones that are quite public. And the departments, I think, does a fair job of involving the public in a variety of ways. I wish there was a way I could say that, you know, to alleviate Senator Duke's your concern about, you know, waking up and having a toll on the Astoria Bridge again. I don't believe that's going to happen. You know, theoretically, could it happen under this bill? I guess the answer is yes. Realistically, would that happen? I don't think so.
Mr. Chair, I agree with much of what Senator Starr has said. And my comfort level, I guess, would be better if I hadn't walked through a number of these. I've watched the City of Portland come forward with a proposal for a toll bridge that completely ignored surrounding communities because there were federal dollars there, and an agency that was ready to walk right with them that would have put a lot of traffic onto residential streets without even considering that. I've watched all kinds of projects and semi-threats and things like that go through when we wanted to do toll roads. As I keep saying, I don't really oppose tolling, given the right circumstances. And I think that it's unlikely that you're going to have a lot of tolling in rural areas because, I mean, the thing that's going to save the chairs project from ever having to be tolled is that it doesn't pay for itself that way. But when you have, say, an Astoria Bridge, and the agency wants to be able to reduce its, because it's, I mean, saltwater bridge has a lot of maintenance on it all up and down the coast. We have those. And they really believe that we ought to be paying because we've got more expenses, which then separates us off from the rest of the state who doesn't have to bear that burden. So I just don't have the faith that you do, but I appreciate that you do.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dukes raises an interesting question, and I don't recall having read, and I'm not sure that as a policy document this should necessarily be so specific, but in terms of the termination of a project, is there any definition of when it would term out? Because the issue that the Senator raises with respect to you have a revenue stream and then the partnership agreement terminates, and then the risk is the issue that you raised, is that you have a continuing toll that the department may choose to just leave in place. We'll be all dead and gone by the time this happens, of course. But
we got rid of ours because it was a statute that created the bridge, and the statute had to be
specific
changed.
Statute.
Yes,
okay.
And we didn't change the statute, so when the bonds were paid off, the toll went away.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, it's the agreement that is approved that goes through the process that will dictate the terms of the project, when it starts, when it's completed, how long the duration is. So that's what dictates when it's terminated. These agreements are generally related to highly visible projects. They are therefore highly political in nature. There is an involvement of every government entity that is in the jurisdiction of the project, that is within the boundaries of the project, and the public must be involved, because the way these go down, the way they fail, is politics. They are highly political. If they're not working, other states we've seen this in other states by studying them. There's legislation passed to tear the project apart. That's what governs these projects and saves them from mistakes.
Further questions? Thank you, Jill. We have two more people signed up.
I would say this was from this was from last time.
So okay.
I don't believe he's here.
Jessica and Doug Ricks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jessica Harris. I'm here today on behalf of the Associated General Contractors. We are in support of this bill. EGC participated on the interim work group that crafted many of the recommendations of the innovative contracting, innovative financing work group report, and were part of the discussions that led to this piece of legislation. We appreciate the work that ODOT has done to address our concerns and concerns of others regarding the contracting and privacy provisions of the bill. They've done an excellent job, and we believe that this will make it possible to bring contracts and projects to Oregon that wouldn't come here but for private industry stepping up and helping to make an investment. Any investment drives further investment. Investment in a bridge, in a road, in an intersection drives subsequent investment around it. And in this kind of economy, we can all use more of that. So we view this as a step forward and an opportunity, hopefully, that when these companies come to use subs that are smaller contractors throughout the state that can use the work right now, and a unique opportunity for Oregon to do some innovative projects that wouldn't otherwise get funded. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Doug Riggs. I just want to again reiterate my support. I think I've spoken to a number of you about the process that has gone through to create this bill. It was a lengthy, detailed process. On page 2 of the report, you'll see the members of the committee directly, and as you can see by looking through it, there are folks who have a tremendous amount of experience not only here but in other states. And I think that's an important point to raise. As the report points out on page 3, nationwide over the past 10 years, more than 350 public-private partnerships have been engaged in. And Jessica makes a good point that the committee also raised, which is they found that many of the projects that occurred would not likely have taken place at all or for some period of time without this type of financing arrangement. The Airport Max, which many of our clients worked on, is, I think, a perfect example of that. If it had not been for the ability of an unsolicited proposal to be submitted to TriMet and the Port of Portland, this probably wouldn't have taken place for 10 to 15 years. And the Airport Max is a project which has exceeded ridership almost every single month, in spite of the fact that September 11th cut back on airport traffic. So from the perspective of Bechtel, Metro, the building trades, and our other clients, we think it's a great opportunity. I did want to make a couple quick points because if my memory serves me, it was Senate Bill 966 that passed last session that expanded the tolling statute beyond a few specific locations to a statewide basis. But I did want to make a second point because I think it's very important. Bechtel's been involved in a variety of these projects around the country, and I can guarantee you that there isn't a single private sector company in the world that is going to be willing to risk their investment and finances in a project that involves tolling unless the local public supports it. And I'll give you an example of the a project in the Seattle area that we were involved in, and Parsons Brinkerhoff was involved in several years ago. It involved construction of a bridge, I believe it was across Lake Washington. And the concept was that it was going to be a tolled project. And in spite of all the new technology, as Senator Starr recognized, where you could drive through the thing at 65 miles an hour, and the only people really inconvenienced are the tourists who've never been there before. But in spite of the fact that the government supported it, the mayor supported it, the private sector supported it, the city council supported it, they had not done a good enough job of going out and getting private sector community support for the project. And as a result, here we are 10 or 15 years down the road, and the project is still on the drawing board, has not gotten off the ground. And the companies which invested millions of dollars in design and engineering were left holding the bag. And that's one of a number of examples from around the country. So I do want to emphasize that I don't think that there are any private sector companies that, having experienced that, or contractors, they are not going to take the risk until they know that the groundwork has been done with the local community in supporting it. I'll just throw one last thing in. I worked for a period of time in Washington, D.C., and I worked for a congressman from Orange County, California. And at the time, back in the early 1990s, they were talking about the Orange County Connector. And I argued back and forth with a congressman that I worked with that I thought that a toll road in these circumstances would gain the support of the populace. And the congressman I worked for at the time disagreed, and he opposed the toll road. The toll road has since gone in place, and what we found is the people who use it the most and benefit the most from it tend to be electricians or janitors or nannies or people who are being paid 10 or 12 or 14 bucks an hour and are willing to pay the $1.25 to get there on time. It's not the lanes for Lexus and multimillionaires who use it. It tends to be the working people who need to get someplace quickly. And so public acceptance in Orange County is dramatic. But I again want to emphasize, I don't think that these projects are going to proliferate. My guess with Senate Bill 772 is we're going to have a small number of major projects that will be vetted in the public and have public support before they go forward. And as a result, I strongly support the bill and would urge you to act favorably today if you could.
Thanks. I think we're there. We just got a note from someone that said we might want to let them know that at 3:45 we're going to be leaving. So, no, you guys have heard that before, right? Is there anyone else who would like to testify on Senate Bill 772A?
Probably recollecting the history of the toll road status.
Right. Yeah, that's what
we reconstructed now.
Oh, let's do that. Just so we have that clear. Because yeah. What we just heard is what I'd remembered, but you know, it has been a year or two.
Mr. Chair, Jim Whitty again. Prior to 2001 session, I'll refer to Mike, but I know that Senate Bill 966, which is the bill that authorized the formation of the Innovative Finance Advisory Committee, that did the work that supports this, that is a foundation for this bill. In that bill, it made the toll road statute statewide. I remember that. Now, Mike, you may know more than that.
Mr. Chair, I think the main thing is that there were changes in the 99th session, but the change that Jim is referring to was the one that made it statewide. And I see the senator has the statute opened up, and I'm wondering if she has a question or follow-up.
No, just a statement. Some of the sections that don't...
1 second. Mike, would you identify yourself?
Sorry. Mike Marsh from ODOT.
Included in the sections that won't apply anymore is, I may not be able, I had it a second ago, and I may not, the requirement that they look at the, that you guys look at the probable impact of the proposed tollway project on local environmental, aesthetic, and economic conditions, and on the economy of the state in general, the extent to which funding other than state funding is available for the project, and it goes on. There's a whole bunch of stuff that we put into the statute relating specifically to toll roads to try to make sure that local neighborhoods are accommodated, and we're looking at the true impact, not just that, you know, the bridge of the road, but the impact of everything surrounding it. And according to this bill, all of that would be disregarded.
That's true.
Jim Carter.
Bruce is not here, but I know you guys understand the politics of the economy of our time, and I don't think that they're going to be too stupid to put into practice anything that resembles a toll at this particular time in our political economic history. So I'm having confidence in the PAC and the fact that you're going to use great wisdom and knowing when the time is right to put into effect tolls in this state.
Mr. Chair, can I...
Let me respond to Senator Carter. Senator Carter, if they built a project too quickly, I would go with you to protest, but I would be smiling. Senator.
And I guess this is part of why I will oppose this bill and why some of this is tough. Senator, I sat on a transportation committee once where we were asked to approve a federal grant for a toll road in your city. And we had local people coming in saying, please don't do that, because where do you think those folks are going to go? They're going to be in my community, and I already have signs up saying 25 miles an hour, please, there are kids present. And the agency was prepared to go forward and take the federal money without doing what I consider due diligence. Maybe they've learned, maybe they haven't, but I can tell you the past history doesn't give me any confidence.
Well, I hope you guys are listening to what Senator Dukes is saying as well, because sometimes the department can be pretty arrogant in going beyond what locals want to see happen. So I'm hoping that you're taking that into consideration. I know you shook your head a little bit, but we've had some dealings with all that. But I may not, because I will be back the next time.
Mr. Chair, if I could respond, we definitely hear the message. We believe in the due diligence involved here, and in terms of the references to statute, some of which were removed in terms of making the tolling process potentially statewide or more broad, we would be happy to commit now that the administrative rule process that we'll use to implement this will incorporate the elements of the statute that refer to the broad public policy and public awareness of what we're doing, and making sure that listening element is a part of the process.
And there's some reason we couldn't put it in the statute? There must be.
After also making that statement I did made, I have faith in believing that these guys are going to use wisdom in what they do. But now you can answer this for that.
Two, we've been focused on roads, but this bill, the way I read it, is any kind of modal transportation project that might, in fact, be subject to this kind of innovation.
You can do a rail line off this if you want.
I know. That's what I'm trying to do. So I'm hoping if I can trade you this train for that road, we can get...
Any.
Okay. Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
At this time, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 772 and open a work session on Senate Bill 772A. Question? Oh, you're waiting. Okay, all right. We're at a work session on Senate Bill 772A.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I need to declare a potential conflict of interest, as I have an economic benefit from firms that may be beneficiaries of this legislation. So I just would like to make that known. For the record.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Carter.
I have no conflict. I just have
interest in them doing the right thing in terms of tolls. With that, I move Senate Bill 772 to the full committee.
We have some amendments.
Amendments?
Yes.
Oh, that's right. The dash 9 and 10. Mm-hmm. Move the dash 9 and 10 amendments to Senate Bill 772.
Chance, is there any objection to moving Senate Bill, the amendments dash 9 and dash 10 together to Senate Bill 772? Any objection? Seeing and hearing none, so moved.
Mr. Chairman.
Senate
Bill 772 to the full committee of defense.
You've heard the motion. Senator Carter has moved amended Senate Bill 772 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any further questions or comments? Yes.
Quick comment. I've served in local government for 16 years before I came here. Probably the one issue that got more phone calls than any other issue I dealt with as a county commissioner was when there was an unfortunate headline related to tolls on the Multnomah County Bridges. So I know that this is not tolling is not a popular idea. It has to be incredibly limited, and I think there's only very, very few situations that it could work. But there's a lot of other public-private partnerships that can function without involving tolling. And my district is pretty much the transportation hub of the Pacific Northwest between the port, I-5, airport. We have to have every possible tool. The transportation movement of people and freight is going to be so critical out of that area. We have to have every tool that's possibly available to us, and I very much want to give the department that full range of tools to face the transportation needs in the future, even though it might involve tolling, which isn't going to be pleasant.
Representative Hansen, I can assure you that all of us are very much interested in how well the Portland region works as far as moving freight and commerce. So, Representative Krieger.
You don't want to have to go to Portland. I hope it's moving. I don't do well driving in your city.
When they finish the St. John Bridge, it's going to be beautiful. You should come over.
Mr. Chair, I wasn't privy to all the conversation testimony, but we were upstairs. Mm-hmm. But there was caught enough of Senator Dukes and Senator Carter's concern that I would echo that you know, they state something here, they need to follow through with that so there's confidence in what mm-hmm. they're doing.
We're talking about the administrative rule action.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we had understanding there. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to compliment Senator Starr for bringing this forward, spending the amount of time mm-hmm. and working on this project and all those people that have collaborated to create what may be a very significant tool for our state. And so I'd like to acknowledge on behalf of the committee that work that's been done.
Absolutely.
He even ended up in my office.
Absolutely right. And you know, and an absolute additional kudos for me from the standpoint of these are a lot of ideas that I've worked on, but he was able to deliver. And I think that's a really major difference. Rather than just talking about it, we're looking at it. Also, I would just like to state that, you know, for folks who may have concern about tolling, in 1947, the discussion of the Newburgh-Dundee bypass began. My daughter attended a 20-year class reunion in Newburgh. The number one issue in the headlines was Elvern Hall talking about the possibility of a toll and the building of the Newburgh-Dundee bypass. At 12 o'clock today, I addressed the Rotary Club in Newburgh, and I mentioned that we're going to be hearing this bill, an enthusiastic encouragement to do something to get this thing underway. So there are communities I think it'll fit, other communities it won't fit, and I think we all are perfectly able to express and encourage our constituents to voice their opinions. And I know I have complete trust that the agency is going to be responsible in this. Very few fact, and Senator Morris, you can agree or disagree with me, the very fact that the questions that we all had in this committee were quickly addressed to make sure that we had clarity, and particularly with Justice coming in and making sure that we were operating very thoughtfully and until we particularly get through the initial projects. Okay, we have a motion. Yes, Senator Dukes.
I think that people have done a great deal of work and very good work on the bill. Why that language had to be removed is beyond me. putting it, moving it from state law into administrative rule is a step that I don't understand. And when I asked, the question wasn't answered. So if the language were in the bill, I would be happy to support the bill. But with the language removed from statute that I think is protection to Oregonians, I would be a no.
Okay. And that is still I did. Okay, we have a motion, and we have one objection. Are there any other objections to the recommendation to move Senate Bill 772 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation? Seeing, hearing, only one. The bill is passed. If we could quickly move to Senate Bill 180, I'm going to close the public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 772. And I'm going... No, I won't be. We will be at ease. Roger, go get those people.
Senate Bill 180, you had a public hearing back in June.
Yeah,
this would authorize the Department of Transportation to distribute monies from the Elderly and Disabled Special Transportation Fund to Indian tribes and declares Indian tribes to be public transportation entities. At the time of the public hearing, I think there was some concern about the potential impact to local government. So you have a memo in your packet from the department giving you several scenarios under current law, what would be if Senate Bill 180 were to pass.
And there were all winners in there, correct?
Probably for the most part, Mr.
With the additional money that we...
with the additional money, and the agency presented you the option under the passage of House Bill 3231, which also came out of this subcommittee, that added additional ID card fees to this fund.
Since you have a team here, Courtney, we should think of that. I have no problem with this now, or comment.
Okay, any questions about... We're in a work session on Senate Bill 180.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Carter.
I move Senate Bill 180 to the full committee with a due pass.
Senator Carter has moved Senate Bill 180 to the full committee with a due pass. Any further discussion? Yes, Gary.
Well, I think this is going to be painful for Mr. Panhollo. So
yes, we want to.
So we should do it as quickly
as possible. And when we got those numbers just for him to see that everybody is a winner here today. Okay.
Well, I enjoy watching people suffer if you want to test
it. Well, that's because she did such a good job. So thank God it wasn't Roger Martin. But
the bus coming.
The bus is coming. Okay. The bus is coming and the bus is going about to pass. Without objection to the passage of Senate Bill 180. Recommendation of the committee. All right. Without objection, hearing and seeing none, it's done.
Carriers.
Thank you, guys. We need carriers. You want to carry? If not, I'd love to carry this thing. But,
okay.
But no, look, Mark, here, go. He does a great job.
Okay.
All right.
Probably not.
No.
Well, you do like to watch people suffer.
Okay, we're still on the air here, and with the tap of the gavel, as we resolve that. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.